One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Patrick Klepek.
Ah! That's my name.
That's your name. I need to fix your video is what I need to fix. Whoa! Well, I ruined your video. I ruined my video. I ruined all video.
That's get rid of that sensitive information where we talk about that we're going to do a call.
That's it. This is what I want. This is this right here is how it should. That's not how it should look either. I've doxed you. Yo, ready for a call? Sure. That's it. That's all the information. It's all out there now on the web.
Finally, all my information is truly out there.
Oh, Jesus Christ. How you doing, buddy? How you living in the week after being targeted by like a shitty, bad faith attempt to drag your name through the mud?
My concerns these days, Austin, are over this coffee cup. Let me point out this coffee cup. You'll notice it's got some breaks.
It does. Use that. Whoa, dog, that has like six different breaks.
Well, it had two. It had two breaks.
I'm working on this.
Different coffee cups.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a lost reference. Starting to chip off a little bit here. But I dropped it and it broke. And then I got some super glue.
Yeah.
Managed to keep it off my hands.
Mm.
Difficult. Put it back on. And then I made a point to tell everyone in the house.
Okay.
My daughter especially. Don't put this coffee cup in.
Yeah.
The dishwasher. It's going to heat it up.
Yeah, it's going to break
It's going to fuck up that glue.
Yeah, need that
glue. And it's going to break again. Well, a couple weeks back, I went to go pick it up.
Thanks, Jessica.
Plunk. It falls off.
Good.
It falls to the ground, coffee everywhere. Clean it up. Got that glue back on.
Still sipping that coffee. You didn't have a second. You didn't have a second coffee cup, a different cup?
I got other coffee cups, but not this one. I don't have a. I actually, it's funny.
Does that coffee cup say anything, or are you just?
It says mug.
Good, great.
I had a Dark Souls one that I broke, and then I bought it again, and then I broke it again, and then I decided that I'm not going to buy it.
Not worth it.
A third time. The second one felt like especially cool. I had said I went to go walk my dog. And my cleaning robot knocked it off
Sure.
a ledge.
Sure.
Just shattered everywhere. And I was like, fine. You know what? Fine. Fuck it. All right.
You don't need. You don't
I'll
need it.
I'll just keep using the coffee cup that hasn't broken, which is number one dad.
Oh.
That's still true.
That one's the only thing still true. How are you doing? How are we doing this afternoon? We want to do a Hot Mic Mornings. And instead, I wrote about Frozen Synapse 2 all morning and then dealt
with some of course.
Phone calls and. Now we're talking about other stuff. How was your morning? Did you do anything fun? Did you have a hot mic morning than...
Dawson, I dug into what the people want to know. They want to know what is the underlying engine technology powering the new horror anthology from the creators of Until Dawn.
I haven't seen this
because they looked at that trailer and said that animation looks a little suspect.
Can we actually watch that trailer?
Using the same stuff. Yeah.
Can we watch that trailer together? What's the that's called the Dark Anthology?
Are we going to watch it together? Is that what we're going to do?
Yeah. Do you want to? Is that? Sure, I'm not going to screen share it with you because last time we tried that, everything broke.
It's fine. You just tell me when you start it, and then I'll just watch it.
It's called the Dark. What?
Well, this is something of Madame.
Oh, this is a different game?
Man of Madame. Well, it's an anthology.
Oh, I didn't realize that was
the Dark Pictures anthology.
Right.
And then Man of
Can you just link me to the video you have in front of you?
Sure.
This is that way we're linked. We're linked on the same ones. All right, let me mute this advertisement for Sekiro, which we'll talk about in a second also, probably, because I got to play that a couple weeks ago. And I'm eager to talk my shit on that. I'm going to get this up on the screen and then get us up on the screen. So this is Bandai Namco is publishing. Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
Yeah, they're actually picking up a bunch of kind of interesting stuff. They're also publishing another game from Don't Nod.
Okay.
I forget what it's called. Mind Killer or something.
It's a Doom game.
Okay. It's Mind. They're calling it Mind Killer now. They announced a Gamescom. I don't know. some other game from Don't Nod that looks like a
storytelling. Okay. Sounds good.
They seem to be investing money in like non-traditional Bandai Namco projects.
Right.
So this is not within the fighting game action, sort of RPG wheelhouse.
It is the story.
Normally.
Okay. Yeah. So this is Man of Medan. Let's give it. I've not seen this yet. I've been like head down on stuff all week, so I've missed a lot of stuff. I'm going to hit play. Ooh. Spooky. All right. I'm fucking here for them doing.
Yeah, it's. There is
campy bullshit. 100%.
There is almost nothing original about that.
No.
Trailer. Like, if you have watched a number of largely mediocre horror films over the years, then that is fits a certain archetype. But that fits with Until Dawn, which was a game that acknowledged horror archetypes and played around with them.
Right.
To varying degrees of success, as opposed to pretending that they don't exist. And
right.
So the idea of them, I think they said they've, like, on a whiteboard, they have like 39 different ones they'd like to make at some point, like examining different subgenres of horror.
Great.
And like, you can be cliche if you're not, like, if you are embracing the cliche, that in some ways, like, allows you to avoid the cliche because you're not. You're calling it what
you're
it is.
You're calling it what it is. Yeah, 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 exactly.
And there are a lot of like subgenres of horror that are not really applicable to like traditional gameplay. And so, like, by just embracing, we're a glorified QTE game. We're just interactive cutscenes where you're just kind of guiding the story along. It allows them to sort of hand wave away, like, all right, it doesn't matter that there's not a whole lot to quote do.
Yeah, because that's not like
you're just
the point,
a character.
Right?
It sets up some button presses and then sets up some story options. And, this is meant for you and a bunch of friends to sit around with drinking and getting. And what I'm curious about is, I know some people, I liked Until Dawn a lot. I liked the first half of Until Dawn a lot. And then I think it really kind of sputters in the second half. But that's like an 8 or 9 hour game.
Yeah.
Which is like, you're not going
to. It's long.
Maybe don't be drinking all day playing Until. I mean, do whatever you got to do.
Right.
But that's an exhaustive marathon. And then, trying
it's
to get
long.
A group together for, like, two different sessions, like, that's,
it breaks it up, and then that's, exactly. Which, like, I think making something more consumable, making it a, like, hey, an evening with Until Dawn makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, even if they cut it in half, like, if it was, like, 5 hours, like, that is, like, that is something a little more consumable, or at least getting people together for, two and a half hour, a movie session is different than getting people together for something that spans,
but
eight to 10 hours.
The thing you were just saying, though, is that, like, I think it's fair to say that those faces looked a little different than I expected.
Until Dawn had kind of awkward faces.
It did. 100%. 100%.
I'm not going to pretend that game, was 100% stellar there. It just struck me as interesting. And then, like, just a red flag goes up when to be clear, they used an engine, I think the Decima engine is what it's called. It's developed by Guerrilla Games. It was used in Horizon.
That's what they used, yeah.
It's also being used for Kojima's new game, and they used it in Until Dawn. It's been used for a number of different games across Sony studios. It's not like Frostbite where it's like, hey, everyone's using Decima. It's just more like, hey, would your game fit this? Like, you can use the tools we already have and share shit. And so I just, the animation just kind of struck me as interesting. And so I just shot a Namco an email. And she's like, hey, they're building their own tech for this. They're like, oh, we're not talking about that.
Is that true? Are they not talking about that?
And so then I was going to write a story that was just like speculative. And I was like, well, let me do a quick
Google. Do your due diligence. Yeah. Do your job.
With the developers, and couldn't find any interviews except for this one German language YouTube channel that they did the interview in English. And like the third question was like, hey, are you guys using the same tech? And like the head of the studio is like, no, like we built our own tech. Like,
great.
The Medan engine or something like that. I was like,
right.
Thanks.
Great. Cool.
Thanks. Which is not their fault. That's.
Wish them luck. I hope the game turns out well, regardless of that. An engine is not. I think that there are people in the commentariat who sometimes can get really hung up on engine.
Yeah,
it was like, I don't fucking know what makes a game engine work. I know what devs have told me, so I know I know what, well, you know, we were just actually talking about not engines, but hardware recently, talking about the limits of the Vita. And so, like, the reason I know that the Vita has limits and serious, like, RAM limits, it only has, like, 512 megs of RAM, and that's a problem, is because lots of devs have told me that. But, you know, I hear so many people on the internet talking shit about, like, Unity or Game Maker or whatever, and it's like, you don't, what do you, like, do you know what you're saying, or are you just jabbing because you have some desire to sound like you know what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, it could also be that, like, they don't have access to, like, a totally big expensive motion capture studio that Sony probably, like, owns and allows their studios to operate. Like, I don't know the specifics of that, but, like, there are lots of sorts of, like, reasonable expectations. And also, this is Bandai Namco. Probably has a lower budget.
Probably. Than Sony, right?
And Sony, who, like, you know, has alluded to, like, God of War being, like, one of their more expensive. Like, they, Sony, right, famously, like, I've heard from up and down, like, allow us, there's a long leash financially for the games they build internally.
I mean, Until Dawn was a VR game to begin with or something, right? Or was a PS3 Move game.
It was a PlayStation 3 PS Move game that moved to PS4 and dropped the PS Move stuff, but kind of kept some of it because you could
move
the controller around to do stuff, or you could turn that off. And yeah, like, that game has changed a lot. I wrote a piece for Kotaku, kind of.
That's what it was.
The evolution of the game. But yeah, this is right up my alley. I'm super excited that they're building something like this. I wish them well, and I'm super excited to see what they end up doing with it. I think there's a lot of promise in Until Dawn that they could capitalize on and build on. So
yeah,
this is one of the more exciting out of Gamescom for me, just because
totally
it is 100%, like someone said. You know, Padre really wanted another one of those games, so
yeah,
let's make three of them.
I, your pal Frendo, one of our mods in the chat, and Robo Witch, also a mod in the chat, both have said, like, games need more short stories as, like, a thing. Yep. I think we see a lot of that in the independent space in terms of just, like, short games that maybe take you an evening to play through. Something like Diaries of a Spaceport Janitor is a game that I really love, and is like, oh yeah, I sat down and I played through that whole game. But in the AAA space, I feel like there is a lot of room for this sort of anthology short story stuff. There's just not much of it. Or
I think part of the problem is, right, is like it's like a
yes,
at the point that you're going to spend the money to build a thing,
to build any, to
you
build
need, you need those at you want to stretch those assets
as far possible
as you can.
Yeah,
and so, like, it's not that, you know, any studio couldn't build something that took 90 minutes. Is that, well, we built all this big fucking forest,
like, which includes
the forest section be 90 minutes instead of like the whole game being 90 minutes.
Well, it's not even just the forest section, right? It's the tech for rendering.
It's like, oh, the animation system we built. Like, really? We're only going to use it for, like, this one little camera shot?
But it's also, like, concept art and style, like, the figuring out a character, like, the way characters look in a game. It's world building. The way that, like, studios work at this point is to develop something that could sustain multiple franchise releases, right? And so, like, we've seen God of War, and we've probably seen a lot of the work that went into God of War, but that foundational work was done at a high cost so that it could be the foundation for another three games in that series. That's how they get that budget greenlit from the jump. They say, okay, we're going to spend a year just figuring out what this game looks and feels like. And then that basic look and feel will stay the same for the next three or four games. And that's what gives them the approval from a publisher. I'm using God of War hypothetically. I don't know this 100%, to be clear for people listening. But that is the model, right, for working in that AAA space. And that is frustrating to some degree, but it's also a reality that we see in most kind of big budget media production. Is like, okay, well, we're building a thing that's going to last a decade because the market is risk averse, and that can be frustrating when you want to see a lot of cool little things. It's why I like weird games like something like Way of the Samurai actually is a series. I don't know if you ever play those games, Patrick, the PS2 games. I guess they released a 360. They released two on the 360 and the PS4, now that I think about it. Way of the Samurai is a wild way to do this, because what they do what they do is, especially with 1 and 2, 3 and 4 end up making it so that each session is much longer. But in Way of the Samurai 1, you're a wandering samurai who comes into a town that is caught between a conflict between two rival groups. and you kind of play Yojimbo, like the character in Yojimbo. You play that character who's kind of playing them against each other and picking sides. And there are like 12 different endings. And so it's a game that will last you between, you know, 12 and 25 hours as you explore the different routes, the branching story stuff. But it always starts at the same place. And you know, it depends on what you do that even changes things. Way of the Samurai 2 does the same thing, except there's like 20 different endings or 15 different endings or something. And it was a way to stretch that same foundational, like, all right, we've built a city, we've built all these different factions and characters, we've spent the time on that art generation and that world building and the tech for the combat and all that, and then what we're going to do is just let you play through it a bunch of different ways, and actually, because it's so small, because each run is between an hour and 3 hours long, like, be able to give you a wide variety of outcomes in that space so that it isn't just the traditional diamond, throw up the rock, like diamond shaped story structure that right. that so many of these branching path games go for.
So that is like the way the samurai games have like, so like Nier Automata, you know, right. is a similar thing, but it has sort of like an ending, like you're building towards a climax.
Yeah.
By the repetition. Or is Way of the Samurai just like, hey, just so you want to checklist all the different endings,
it
like
depends on the entry. Like there is like a checklist version of it in which you're basically just like, okay, this time I'll side with the mercenaries. This time I'll side with the townspeople. This time I'll side with the king. But the thing that happens is there are ways from run to run to save weapons that are like really good. You can like go put it in a chest basically, and your next run through you can go get that. And what that kind of does is unlocks the more difficult runs where you're fighting much higher level bosses and kind of taking on the higher ups in the various groups. And so there is kind of, in 1 and 2 anyway, which are the two that I played the most, there is like a most satisfying wrapped up every, you kind of, you leave town feeling like you did the right thing. Like this is my good, the capital G good S rank ending. And to do that, you needed to have spent some time doing the other endings just to level your character and their weapons up over multiple runs. But it's not like Nier where it's like each successor Nier, it doesn't know this is happening. The narrative doesn't know that it's this weird repeating thing. You know, that would be, I would play that game. In fact, I did. It's called Nier Automata and it's great.
The other interesting thing about the last thing I'll say about, the anthology series is that, so in the same interview that I was watching to kind of figure out the tech stuff is that the interviewer mentioned like, oh, and like, you know, it's an anthology, you're working on three right. episodes. And they said, well, we're calling them games. And then there was like a really interesting correction because video games for a while went through like this big embracement of episodic. Like that was like a very much sort of like hot way to make games, like, oh, like this is a way that you can like make more money by right. like charging a little bit less, but like charging over a long period of time. And now like you don't really see episodic game. I mean, Telltale's making them, but like they're more or less the only game in town that's still doing that because of the way they've structured everything and they seem to work well for them. But I thought it was interesting that like, yes, in some ways these are episodes because they're part of an anthology and that's sort of how, even if they're not, they said they're not connected. They're not building a larger lore between the three of them. I thought it was interesting that you so quickly dismissed the term episode because I think, and I've heard this from folks that have tried pitching episodic games in like the last couple of years that it's more or less toxic.
Right.
As a term. Like it turns out that
everyone I get
plays
that.
The first episode and then they don't play the second. Like the drop off is so steep that it is not worth it because you're taking such an enormous risk that people are going to invest in the first one.
Right.
And that you're building resources for a fourth episode that, you know, you may reasonably be able to expect that even if people like it, you know, 60% of the audience, 80% of the audience may never make it to that last episode.
Right. Well, like, I mean, Hitman 2, right, is a game.
That is just evidence indicting the same thing.
Which is frustrating to some degree because, and I'm just going to pull up this video in the background while we talk a little bit. The Hitman, I put on, there it goes. There we go. I put on automated captions for this video while we chat over it. Hitman 1 worked so well for so many people because it was episodic, right? Like it was a game that was benefited by sitting with the content, going through these levels again and again. I know you never played it because you don't like good games, but
Got me.
It's so good, and so much of what makes it work is that, or so much of what made it work for that year with a lot of people who would not traditionally sit with a game like that and go replay through the level. Like, honestly, people like you and me who are like, or we have a deadline, I gotta beat these levels, turn in a review, right, and move on to the next thing, was that like, oh, okay, you only have Sapienza for the next 2 months, and they're going to add new stuff to Sapienza week to week so that you do want to go back to it, so you do revisit it, so that you do learn the ins and outs of these very complex clockwork little worlds. And the thing that he just announced that I'm very happy about is that all of those levels are going to be in Hitman 2, but I'm still not quite sure that I'm like going to have the fortitude to play Hitman 2 the way people played Hitman 1, because I didn't really play Hitman 1 the way people played Hitman 1. I kind of like jumped into it, played through it, did the escalations that I heard were the best ones, and some of the side missions and like other content that I heard was the best, and then moved on because I had to. Whereas if it had been a thing that was slowly coming out this whole year, I would probably be able to be like, all right, I'm just going to keep dipping into this for this month. And I don't know, maybe I'll still get the same basic hour count out of it, and I'm still super, super excited about it this year. But it's one of those things where I actually really liked that episode, but also it reflects what you're saying, which is episodic is toxic. I'm sure they have the numbers that I don't have that say whatever benefit that would be to Austin Walker is not fucking worth it for our bottom line,
or we just in terms of the cost benefit analysis,
like, right,
or risk assessment. It's like, well, we'd rather get all that money up front,
right,
and then
and put it in a bank and have it work
a version
for us
of what they were doing with the first game as part of a season pass,
right,
that it kind of drops out. It was an interesting experiment, right, though, because like the Hitman, it's easy to forget now that people love Hitman again, but like the Hitman game before that one,
yeah,
dropped like a rock. Like,
yep,
it didn't connect at all with people. And there was reason to think that, oh, maybe this series has just sort of like
run its course.
Like, and, yeah, and it's time, you know, for them to do something else. You know, maybe playing in the same space. And I actually think a huge part, other than the last Hitman being what by all accounts a genuinely good game, I'm not even sure the Hit game, from what I understand, the Hitman game before that was not a bad game. It just didn't quite connect in the, yeah, same way. The way it was doled out episodically, the fact that it went against the grain of how most games come out, and if they don't connect, they're just gone.
Yeah.
It was allowed Hitman to cut through the noise because it was capitalizing on what is actually fun about episodic stuff by nature is that it's sort of like time contained. There's like a water cooler talk around, yeah, like that specific thing before we move on. Like, these days, it's wonderful that you can jump into anything at any time. And there was an article that like Kirk Hamilton wrote last year that was like, there's never been a better time. Right time to play a video game,
right,
which is totally true. Just the way that games are treated as a service and the way they just, you know, sales and blah, blah. There's all sorts of reasons where like you don't have to be there day one. But like what Hitman did was like create an excitement around itself over and over,
yeah,
and over again. And I just highly doubt, maybe now that people like Hitman, and like maybe it'll be built into the audience and it'll be able to pull it off with the second game. But I think it's going to be tougher when it's, you have like this base game that's, you know, let's say 15, 20 hours long. And then they're going to try and replicate that with season pass stuff when most people are probably going to be slowly working their way through the season pass stuff. And it's just the idea that there's a completed concentration, a conversation on a very specific thing as opposed to this longer thing. It's the, you know, the same way that conversations around television shows are,
right,
so much more difficult these days, because it's like, well, okay, I want to talk about episodes. Everything dropped today. I want to talk about episode 7.
Right.
Are we going to talk about episode 7 once, like, the statute of limitations on spoilers is up? Well, at that point, like, everyone's moved on to that new show.
The next show.
And, like, no one, yeah, gives a shit about episode 7 and this cool thing that happened.
Just like, write about episode 7. I'm so deep in the category. I like, and the thing that sucks is you won't get the pickup on it today if you did.
No,
do you
it's
know
like,
what I mean?
No one's, like, but, literally, like, in commercially, like for folks, like critics, people that write about it, there's, mm-hmm, so much less of a justification to do that work to critically examine it,
a specific,
because no
piece
one's going to click on that shit.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's just it's interesting. I think there's a lot of parallels between what Hitman accomplished last time around and like, you know, the way television is distributed and like the ways that now it's actually, and the way that Hitman worked, kind of hit because it was interesting for it to be episodic. Like, for example, like Castle Rock, like a show on Hulu, which is not the only one doing this, but it is specifically.
Is that good? Should I watch that?
It's if you like that sort of genre,
sure,
work, it is a good version of that, okay, genre work. I heard it had a very strong episode last night. I'm an episode behind, so I haven't watched it yet. But that's a show that's deliberately saying like, hey, we're serialized, we're episodic. We want people to be like, holy shit, at, like the cliffhangers and stuff like that. And so we're going to come out, not because we don't have the episodes ready, but because we think there's a reason, there is an advantage to being divvied up.
Right.
And I think games, there are games that could benefit from that, even if it's not necessarily like episode one, episode two, episode three, episode four. And so, yeah, it's interesting. But, yeah, I am excited to actually play the Hitman game.
You should.
That's November, right?
I literally just had that video up, Patrick. Why didn't you ask me when I literally had the video up and could look?
Hey Siri, when is Hitman 2 coming out?
Okay, I should know this. I have a friend who's working on it.
I don't know that shit,
Janine. I'm sorry, I don't remember when your game is coming out. I'm a terrible person. It is coming out November 13th. November 13th. Sure. You know what a game is that I'm super excited is coming out all at once. All at once. I don't have to wait episodically. Shadows Die Twice, Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice, which just put out a gameplay video in which I got to play some time with. I got some hands-on time with 2 weeks ago. Let's watch.
Hands-on time.
Let's watch this.
Is this the 5 minutes?
This is the 5 minute and. Ooh, you have 50. Wait, how long is your
5 minutes and 51 seconds?
I have 31 seconds. Are you on some like knockoff video? I'm gonna link you mine. Mine's on the Activision webpage.
It's the same one. It's just because the yeah, just link it to me. It's because someone's put like their subscription stuff.
Yeah, of course, at the end. Yeah, that's why I went
also,
to the source.
I'm gonna link into the chat.
Like my chat or your chat?
Your chat. Okay. Or no, the Waypoint chat.
Okay. Apparently no. People are saying Kato says the stream died, but it seems good on my end. Sir 5000 says, oh, did Janine Hawkins write for Hitman 2? Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. It's very cool. All right.
I'm putting in a, from Gamescom, Epic Name Bro, who is a well-known
someone out there.
He's got really good commentary and analysis.
Oh, cool.
That demo where he plays through it without commentary and then goes through and like breaks down like very specific things about what's working. What's happening in that demo, so people should definitely check that out.
I recently watched Epic Name Bro play through, start and fail to finish a Demon Souls playthrough earlier this year. Or I think he's since finished a different one than the one I was watching, but cool. Let's give a look to this one. This is, I guess I'll link this one in the chat also, I'm not going to do that. I linked this video in the chat. Patrick, I'm about to hit play on this video. I don't need to link it in the chat for people. They're just going to watch it here.
It's true.
It's a new age at Waypoint where I can just show videos from video games. So, all right, I'm going to hit play. Ready? Three. Do you have the link?
Are you doing it on one or are you doing it on zero?
Zero. Three, two, one, play. All right, ready? Mm-hmm. Three, two, one.
No, I already hit play. Okay, we
got to
do it again.
Oh, we got to do it again. Okay.
Yeah, because you said it twice.
Well, I was giving you the...
I was ready to go. Just like when we do our class for our podcast, I'm ready to go. I don't need the extra 5 seconds. All right,
3, 2, 1, play. Here we go. So I played this last week, or 2 weeks ago now, I guess. This demo is the same area. This is the same area that they showed us back at E3. And the first thing I'll say.
Now with the user interface.
That's one. Two, the jumping feels so good. It feels so good to jump around, to do this sort of like stealth kill, but also just like, I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna walk I'm not gonna watch this straight through because that's the person I am. The thing that they don't show you here, maybe the thing that if you're looking very close you can notice, is that while you're in midair, the game will start to mark other places, and as soon as it turns green, you can hook into it, which means if you time it right, you can totally just chain grapples together and like bionic commando your way through the world, and that feels great.
This is a game, this is actually an observation by Name Bro that... like stuff like that is so built for speedrunners where like the moment they start playing this game, they're going to be going like, you know, I mean, it's just like, they're going to be like really ridiculous ways to break this game. And there's there's all these like really subtle details that I'm like the From's games have all sorts of minutiae and attention to detail, but they're not like visual powerhouses. And neither is this one, but like there's little subtle things like when you grapple on to a tree,
right?
And like the tree,
the
bounces,
snow drops,
and, like, the snow
falls.
There's like, little stuff like that that they seem to be paying attention to in this game in particular.
Yep.
That I really appreciate.
So a couple things to look at here as combat's going on. The entire game is about this posture system, right? So you have a bar at the top of your enemy, and you have one right below you at the bottom. As you block stuff and you fail to get good parries, your posture meter decreases. The same thing happens to them. As you hit them, their posture meter decreases. And as you get proper good parries in, their posture meter, it doesn't decrease, sorry, it fills up, right? They lose posture.
You can't hold block. You can. But then that's not a timed block,
right?
Which means they're going to be able to break through. And
right.
So you need to be timing, dodging, and then timing your blocks. And you have to block, right? Like, so in the same way that you parries were required to some degree in Bloodborne,
yeah,
like this game pushes that even
further. Even further, but the window is bigger. The window is bigger.
Kind of get away with it.
Yes.
Like, you didn't always have to, but it was, like, definitely encouraged for you to parry. This game is, like, fucking...
Learn to parry.
This game for me is like, yeah. Yo, have you been avoiding parrying in every one of these games that we make? Like, no longer.
Right.
We're going to teach you how to parry.
Some other stuff. Whenever you see that red kanji appear, that's an unblockable attack, but there's a counter to it that's about movement. So with that first big samurai dude, there was a thrust that he does at one point, and you kind of jump up over him and, like, stab into his head. That's the way you counter that. So there is still, like, a dodge-centric stuff. Next thing is these prosthetic tools, and we'll go through this a couple times probably is my guess. The prosthetic tools are things like this axe, which breaks through the shields. Because you have this, like, prosthetic hand, basically. You have this, like, this mechanical hand on your left arm. And so that's, they showed off the, or I got to play around with the axe, which can break through defenses. A flame vent, which is like a short-range flamethrower. And
it both lights the enemy on fire and also lights your sword on fire.
Well, if you combo it, it lights your sword. And that's the thing.
Right,
Each of the weapons has, like, a secondary function. What I was saying was there is kind of a stealth system, sort of like Tenchu here, where if you don't deal with people like this old cultist grandma, she will ring bells and let the demon samurai know where you are. I was also saying that this game has sculptor idols, which are its equivalent of bonfires, where you get back your healing item. Your healing juices refill. Your Estus basically comes back. So it is no blood vials. I'm very thankful for that one, Patrick.
The amunet, like, what are they? What is it?
White spirit emblems. Yes.
White spirit emblems, which are the equivalent of, like, quicksilver bullets in Bloodborne.
Yes.
Those are an expendable item, and
yes,
when you are going to a shrine, it is pulling from a box as opposed to just refilling, which is bad. They should change that. They shouldn't do it. There's literally nothing about making that an item that you have to grind for that meaningfully makes the game more interesting. It drives me up a wall.
Yeah.
Because it just, if you have all of them, it refreshes them in the box. If you don't have enough, you're probably just going to go
fast
travel to somewhere
and get enough to put it
in your box.
Yep, totally.
Get out!
All right, so this person died, and so, unlike me, who got through this whole segment without dying, that's not true, I died way early, but then I came back. When you die, you can spend a resurrection token, which is that thing in the bottom left, to resurrect, to come back. Shadows die twice, not once, and you're a shadow. So there's that flame vent, which again uses the white spirit emblem, and sets your sword on fire, which is cool as hell.
Yes.
And
I wasn't 100% paying attention where, like, if you do a certain dodge where he tries to kick you, that you can then, grapple onto his back.
Yeah, the red kanji means, man, this person keeps dying. The red kanji means it's an unblockable attack, so you cannot parry it. But there is, from what they told me, some sort of counter to it. So there's a fight coming up later where the character they're fighting has, like, a spear. And you actually dodge towards the spear and do an attack, and you kind of, like, hop up on the spear tip and then attack them and do good damage that way, which is really cool. I'll also say this video, the video that they uploaded, is, like, pretty washed out. I can actually go to... I can't show the unedited whole B-roll, but they sent over some B-roll that I can also bring up, and we can... I can show you two other little things that I'd love to actually point out from my experience playing. See, B-roll provided. So I'm not going to run the whole thing. One, I do actually think this game looks pretty fucking good. It doesn't come...
And people are freaked out because it's bright?
Yeah, but like Bright
like runs counter to like basically everything else that like From has done for the
that's
the
fair
10 years.
Yeah, that's fair. But I think it just looks really fucking cool. I think that like the silhouette of the castle in the distance is great. Obviously, no UI here because it's B-roll. It's meant to be talked over. But the environmental design is just really good. But the thing that I was gonna go forward and show, or actually maybe it's not. Yeah, it is. It is here. So I'll just play from here really quick. This is where the demo ended, the demo that I played ended, and it is...
yeah, this is the boss we saw at E3.
Totally. So this area is gorgeous, and I think shows what they can do with light, and also what they're able to do with the kind of Sengoku Japanese feudal Japan samurai setting. This boss is great. I don't think this video actually had any of the boss fight, but... it's a good-looking fucking boss, and it's a really cool fight that I want to talk through just a little bit because it looks cool. Also, look, I do this with video. This is neat. Look at all those leaves, Patrick. You can't see any of this, can you?
Next generation technology.
Next generation leave technology.
How would that look on the new NVIDIA card?
The $12,000
leaves.
So that fight is really cool because again, you don't see it. You don't get to see that fight actually happen there, but. You're jumping around on the trees and stuff mid-fight. You're, like, dodging attacks. You're making distance and all that other stuff. I'm just going to have this run in the background while we continue to talk through some of it. It's really fucking cool. It's, like, it's one of those things that's, like, it takes Bloodborne in a direction that I'm even a little more excited about because it's... I've always said that my favorite thing about these games is feeling not when I'm fighting a gigant. I like the giant bosses. I really do. But I really like feeling like I'm in a duel. And this whole game is that feeling.
Right.
So I've been enjoying it so far, or I enjoyed my time with it. Do you have any lingering questions as a Souls fan, as a From fan?
One thing I'll observe is that I think it is striking that they've chosen to essentially show the same exact demo twice.
Yeah.
Once at E3, once at Gamescom, my guess is they'll show at least, you know, there'll probably be one big PR push sometime this fall, early next year. You know, it'll be on the cover of
It's March 22nd.
Game Informer or something. Right. But like, I'm excited that they're not showing very
like they
much.
Even the way they even talked about this stuff, both when we saw it at E3 and again when I played it a couple weeks ago, was like, oh, yeah, well, in this demo, we just put this here so that you could see what a boss fight would feel like. We just put this here to show there's a big snake section in the demo that they showed us, which is like there's a big snake and you're kind of maneuvering and being stealthy to avoid this. When I say a big snake, I don't mean like as big as a bus. I mean as big as like a dragon from Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, like that, like the snake in God of War.
Like so, the snake in God of War, exactly. And you're like hiding from it, and trying not to engage it at all because it'll fuck you all the way up. And I asked them, I was like, oh, hey, is this like, are we going to see more of these kind of big mythological creatures in this game? And they were like, yeah, like this snake is just here to show you that we care about big mythological creatures. There's going to be a lot of those in this game. And this section like might not even be in the game in this way. And so this whole like little courtyard and all that stuff, my guess is we'll get this area in the game, but there might be completely different context or different enemy layout. Or who knows? Maybe not. Maybe this is a true vertical slice of the game. But they kept kind of saying like, oh, yeah, this secret ninja wall that you can walk through is just there to show you that there are secret ninja walls in the game. It's not like that's not necessarily actually what this will look like or where it'll be. And so I'm really glad they're keeping a lot close to the chest, but still kind of communicating what the core of the fighting experience is, you know?
Yeah, and I was reading some chatter about this game earlier. Like, I was actually reading through, like, the comments on, like, Epic Name Bros' video, and, like, there are amongst some sort of, like, some, you know, Souls enthusiasts, some disappointment over some of the changes they're making, like, specifically, like, removing character customization. Like,
right.
Really, it's not going to be as nearly as RPG heavy.
Right.
Like, in this game,
you're not creating a character.
You're going, like, they've said that there will be, like, choices for the player to make in terms of, like, a skill tree that you're probably filling out,
yeah.
But that, you know, that'll be the type of thing that it's not going to be the same as a build.
No,
probably. Like, I don't know.
You're playing a ninja, right? Like you're playing this ninja.
They want to build it. They're building a game in which they have certain expectations over what the player, how they're going to be playing, which makes for, I mean, in some ways, like it's way more like a traditional action character action game.
Yep.
That it's more of like a traditional character action game,
like action
with
game.
Some Souls elements,
yes.
As opposed to a soul, like between those two sort of, it's moving away from its own subgenre
And I'm glad that From Software is doing that because, like, other studios are picking up the slack, right? Like, if you want Sekiro, like, but more Soulsy, like, Neo
exists, does that.
And they're making Neo 2. And that game, Neo 1, was like 100 hours long with like big DLC. So it's like, and that game, you know, I played it for like 15 hours and then
it seemed good. It seemed really good.
Yeah, I didn't stop because I stopped mostly because I heard it was 100 hours long. Yeah. It was just like,
well, not in my, yeah, totally.
But that game exists and like, I want From to continue to surprise. And I'm fine with them saying like, hey, we're going to categorically, in a lot of ways, move on from a lot of the stuff we've established and let other people kind of play with that while still, like, you know, you can't not look at Sekiro and go, like, oh, like, you see plenty of the Souls, you know,
stuff. Yeah, definitely.
But I'm 100% fine with them saying, like, we're, like, in some ways, like, it's exciting because by them being able to, like, have expectations for what the player behavior is, it, you know, who knows what that means in terms of, like, you know, character design and, like, you know, it allows them to structure fights in a way that, like, we're going to push you to play a certain way that may make you uncomfortable because we know that you have X, Y, and Z.
Yep.
And that's just not the case in – they're more limited in terms of what they can do in the games they've made in the past. Now, you know, I still want Bloodborne 2. Fucking please
we'll
make
get
Bloodborne
there.
2.
We will get there at some point. I'm so sure.
I think 2 is, like, the magic number with From Software. Is like,
I agree.
Like, you honestly – I know you like Dark Souls 2, but what I will say is, like, I feel like Dark Souls – sequel to Demon's Souls.
Demon's Souls,
like,
yeah.
Not,
I get you.
You know, in the same universe.
Yep.
You could have just stopped after Dark Souls, right? Like,
and
I
then
felt
done
like,
Bloodborne.
And done Bloodborne. Like, there are interesting things in, you know, Dark Souls 2, but, like, in terms of what the gameplay evolution, what they meant to accomplish, like, Dark Souls was, like, meaningfully finished, like, put a period on what they'd established with Demon's Souls.
Yeah.
And I guess in some ways you could look at, like, Sekiro as like the I think there's ways you could look at this as a sequel.
Dude, absolutely.
Bloodborne.
It does. This
may be From Software saying, like, look, like, there was no reason for us to make a sequel to Bloodborne. What if we, like, we build on the things we were playing with in Bloodborne, but by putting it in a different IP, by putting it in a different world, you, like, remove some of the baggage associated with that in a way that, like, people aren't going to look at it and go, yeah, but I liked how this worked.
This one thing worked, yeah. The two things I'll say really quick. One, combat in this game feels frightening in a way that I didn't even really ever have with Bloodborne. I had it with the first time I played Demon's Souls, because it was just like, what is this? What is happening?
But you feel comfortable playing,
right? And it, even with Bloodborne, I had enough of a vibe. I got it well enough because it felt fundamentally like Dark Souls. I didn't want to get hit, and I'd already kind of done a one parry build in a Dark Souls game, so I'd already, like, gotten my head around those interrupts. For whatever reason here, because it's all interrupts, because it's all about managing these parry bars, or these stamina bars, and because you don't have stamina, because you don't have your own stamina system where your attacks are limited and your dodges are limited and stuff like
Spam
that.
Away, baby.
It, like, it's almost like there's a missing, I don't mean this is in a pejorative way, but there's a missing kind of like restrainer on you, and that is paralyzing in some way. Because in Dark Souls, like, all right, I can do 1, 2, 3, and then my stamina is gone. That means I'm going to get in, I'm going to do two or three attacks, and I'm going to back out.
For rolling,
exactly.
And then maybe running away.
And as weird as it sounds, not having that restraint means that because the possibility space is so much bigger, you're, like, kind of more scared because you don't have that kind of natural, those natural limits to help guide what the rhythm of the combat feels like.
I guess that's where the resurrection mechanic probably...
Totally.
You could imagine...
Oh, you earn that through, like, combat also, by the way.
But you could also imagine that wasn't originally in the game and that, like, naturally they found, like, well, if we're going to... In a game where we have explicitly made that it's going to be difficult, we're going to punish you, and we're going to punish you through death.
Yep.
We're like, over time, it has worked a very specific way to train players to have very specific expectations that in a game, we're like, actually, we want you to be very, very aggressive. We want you to take hits. We want you to block hits.
Yep.
We want you to parry hits. That it would then logically follow that, okay, in order to accommodate for that, it makes sense to give players a little more space, not necessarily for mistakes, but to encourage that type of behavior. I also noticed an Epic Name Bros video that he fell off a ledge at one point.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, you don't die anymore from that.
Interesting. You take some damage.
Take a health hit.
Cool.
And move on, which is, I think, is fundamentally in line with these
the
other
move
sorts
towards
of
character action and away from action RPG. With, the, I mean, like, again, you can resurrect in this game, and they're going to tell you again and again that's not about difficulty, but I also can't help but think it's a little bit about difficulty.
I don't think it's about the, but specifically I would say it's not about appealing to a wider audience, right? Like, it's not From Software saying, hey, I mean, maybe it will have that effect.
I think it'll have that effect. Yeah.
But like watching this, like, this game doesn't look easy, but I think it's more about giving players leeway rather than, I guess if it has a knock-on effect of making more people willing to try it, fine. But I don't necessarily think that was the intent of it. I think it was more about giving players a little bit more of a leash in terms of how they're actually playing.
It's such a different goal, right? Maybe it suggests that, it underscores the fact that they have a different goal in mind here, right? With Dark Souls and with Bloodborne and with Demon's Souls, so much of that goal was the repetition, learning an environment, learning an enemy layout, figuring out specific behaviors to defeat enemies. And I think a lot of that will still stay. But in the move away from RPG, where if you're not gaining XP from those kills, that loop actually can become pretty frustrating, right? Imagine, because one of the things that happens in Dark Souls is you hit a brick wall, whether that's a boss or a difficult area, and so you keep walking against it, or you maybe go explore somewhere else, but let's just say you're going to keep walking against it, doing run after run after run, you're slowly building up souls, you're slowly building up currency, and then eventually you have enough to level up a bunch, and so you're able to go out and go level up and then come back through. If in this that's not happening, if you're killing enemies just to progress geographically through the space, then there's a good chance it would get really fucking frustrating to hit that brick wall and have to load your save back to the beginning of the level and go through it all again, or at the previous checkpoint or whatever. Really quickly, briefly, other thing I love is this big ogre who does a bunch of wrestling moves, like a ridiculous drop kick and a power bomb. Keep it up. Keep it up, big weird ogre. those are my impressions right now on this game. I'm so excited for it to come out.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Yo, what's happening between like mid-February or like late February and late March this year?
Let's look at
it's bad. Wikipedia video games 2019. Here we go. Let's get this up on the put it up on the board.
January is Combat 7.
Cool. That game looks cool. That game looks cool. Huh. What? That's January? I didn't know that was January.
It's the same slot Resident Evil 7 came out in. January 29th. Kingdom Hearts 3.
Whoop, yeah. Whoop. Excuse me? What was that last little bit?
That's the noise they make in Kingdom Hearts when they they get the kingdom.
Gotcha.
Okay, PC version of Ace Combat 7.
That's fine.
Trials Rising.
Cool. Then.
Anthem.
22nd. February 22nd. Anthem.
Oh, yeah. Anthem. Crackdown 3. Days Gone.
Metro. That's already.
Untenable.
And Metro Exodus.
Untenable. That date is not going to support... Those some
four games. Gotta
move.
Someone's got to blink.
So I said this. We discussed this at E3. I was like, "Yo, it should be a race to who's going to secure a spot in
March." Well,
and yo, other games already did that. Devil May Cry 5, March 8th. Division 2, March 15th. The Sinking City, 21st. You don't really count. I mean, I'm looking forward to that game, but
that game seems cool.
I'm just saying, like, it's not.
I get
you.
Yeah, yeah.
And Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, 22nd. So there's still room in March.
But here's the wildest thing for me is on the 22nd, to put on our industry analysis hat, this is a head-to-head day between two first-party titles that don't look that good. Crackdown 3 and Days Gone are both dropping on February.
They're being left to die.
They're being left to die.
Where it's like, look, if you were to put them out in a time when they could be, and maybe this is honestly a strategy, I don't know.
Right. Well, like if you have to call,
if you put them out on their own, right?
Right.
If that game comes out in early January, right? Days Gone, the date it should come out is like first or second week of January.
Right.
It's got space to itself.
Yep.
Like it can drive a conversation. What if Sony goes, what if we don't want it to drive?
Right, because Sony has to talk to investors. These companies have to call investors, and investors should be like, yo, why didn't Days Gone do well? And here's what they can say right now. And this is complete, like, galaxy brain bullshit that I'm on right now. I want to be really clear.
Yeah,
I know
just, this but is idle speculation.
100%. This is living room of the Airbnb wild speculation mode.
This is Austin and I trying to figure out some possibilities of a weird rumor that I heard.
Oh,
it's like getting really excited about some of the possibilities, even if they didn't really pan out.
They're like,
should have recorded
that. Investors saying, why didn't Days Gone sell well? Why didn't Crackdown 3 meet its targets? And if they had shipped those games in early January, they would have to be like, yeah, those games didn't do good. Those games were bad. And instead, they can be like, well, it's a very busy month. It came out on the same day as Anthem and Metro Exodus. And Anno 1800 was right around the corner. And and the investors go, oh, Anno 1800, Metro Exodus, Anthem.
Well, 1800, they've made like 1,799 other one of those.
That's
like,
a very
popular.
Exactly. And so that is like, that's you. There, if you're going to send it to die, send it to die. You know, there's a strength of schedule concept, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, yeah, it lost, but it lost against Anthem and Metro. Like, what are you gonna do? And then, yeah, DMC5 is a week later, and Division 2 is a week after that. So, like, or 2 weeks later, and then a week after that. It is a...
And this is without any independent games. This is without other games slipping. This is without announcements that will... I mean, it's only August, right?
Yep.
Like, this schedule is going to flip with some other stuff in between.
Shenmue 3, baby. Let me have it. Let me get that Shenmue 3. I'm looking at this
August,
long list of
that's next August.
Is that actually scheduled for August?
Okay.
Someone didn't update this Wikipedia page, Wikipedia editors.
That's true. It does say unknown. That's untrue.
Did you fucking see the Daemon X Machina in the trailer?
The what?
The Daemon X Machina,
that's
new
mech game. No, I did not.
It's a new one. It's great. I'm gonna bring it up. I'm gonna link you to it. I know you don't care. I care.
I'm glad that you care.
I'm going to link it to you because that's coming out next year also. Thank you, Patrick. That means a lot. I bring it up only because it looks cool as shit. And also because it's coming out next year sometime. Look, I'm basking in the red glow of this screen. You ready to hit play on this?
Yep.
3, 2, 1, go. Get that good snap.
That snap is still good.
It's really good. You create a character in this. If you want to create a character, you should play Daemon X Machina.
Oh, so for the fans upset about Sekiro, you just turn your eyes
just look at
Daemon X Machina.
Listen, it is taking the place of a different FromSoft game for me, which is Armored Core. In fact, has an Armored Core designer on it. So, you know. And they kind of, in this trailer, show off a bit of why you create a character. Because on top of the mech stuff, you can get out of your giant mech now. And get like a little suit, like a Iron Man suit or something. I don't like when you're just, all right, I'm going to fight mechs from the ground now. Sure. Why not?
This looks good.
Yeah, dude, there's a lot going on. I'm a little worried about the Switch's ability to run all this.
And it's an action game, which is like every time I look at the art or the trailers for the Monolith Soft RPGs, I'm like, man, that looks cool. I don't want to play an MMO.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, how
the combat works. Yeah.
It's like, I just want. Give me mechs.
Totally.
This looks like, yo.
This has mechs.
You wanted some mechs. That's a big sword.
That's a big sword. Those are lots of missiles. The character in the red and black smaller mechs in Japan are being voiced by the voiceover actors for, like, the... effectively, like, the Luke and Darth Vader of Gundam, which is a really good casting decision. It's Amuro and Char, which is... And all right, look, there's just a melancholy mecha man now at the end.
There it is. Daemon X Anim.
I love this little credit screen also with the white text. Sign me all the way the fuck up.
I want to point out My Cool Young History in the chat has an excellent recommendation that if Sekiro also deeply reminds me of an excellent game from years ago called Mark the Ninja, which is coming out on Switch.
Is it?
It is a year. Yeah. It is a really, really fucking good ninja game.
I
it's 2D,
this.
But it is
really good ninja game.
One of my favorite games of the year when that came out.
Clay, another Clay joint.
Yes. I remember I've asked the designer of that game multiple times, like, yo, you should like make another one of those. And he's like, nope. So
really,
they're not going to make another Mark the Minute.
Good, well, for, you know, good for them.
Nils A. Anderson, who worked at Clay,
right.
Firewatch, and is now off doing his own thing. At least he's not going to make that game. But yeah, Mark the Ninja, fucking.
That's fair. That's fair. That game is great.
Are you looking for like a non.
I was looking for like a non-proprietary. Trailer two. Here's I got you. Trailer. Special edition trailer. Here we go. Show me that.
Sure.
Here we go.
Oh, proceed.
Please.
Hit me with that inappropriate.
Inappropriate ninja. I'm going to time out Twitch user inappropriate ninja.
The inappropriate gamer has logged on. Wait, that's most of them.
This game is really cool. The movement just feels so good.
Oh, it's so tight. It's just, when they say game feel, they mean games like Mark of the Ninja.
They do. Man.
And it's just a lot of really smart implementations of, like, you know, like what you would think of like a ninja, like even the stealth, like hiding behind like the vases, like that's not
right.
That's just most games would just, you just hit them with your sword and they break and they drop some jewels.
Yep. I really love
rocks there. Like they crumble when you move. So they're not like a spot.
It's a great game.
Mark the Ninja.
Let me tell you about another really good, really good Clay game. Invisible Ink. No, I'm not going to make people watch Invisible Ink trailers. What other news has hit out of Gamescom?
Let me load up.
Let's go over to Kotaku. IGN right? Oh, does IGN have the...
They had the best one.
Okay.
All the news trailers and gameplay.
Hit me up.
Hey, do you... you've talked about this on Twitter. Do you like quickly want to... I'm sure everyone knows what happened with Cyberpunk. Because we shouldn't talk about Cyberpunk without mentioning what
shouldn't.
Happened with Cyberpunk.
It's so frustrating. It's so frustrating. I'll bring us up while we get some links together and stuff.
Sure.
Over on the Cyberpunk 2077 Twitter feed, they made a really, really shitty, lazy, and unfunny joke. Like, it's one of those jokes from a bucket where people don't even know why they're laughing, but the answer to the reason, what the punchline of the joke is just transphobia.
It's very comparative to a lot of what we now consider homophobic jokes, mm-hmm. like in the 90s, like the South Park era, where it's that's gay, like stuff like that, where you laugh and that's just what everyone did. And then you look back and understand why you're laughing. It's like,
it's garbage. Oh, yeah. And that's like the thing is like, there is no other reading of that joke that isn't, I'm making fun of people. The joke in question, I'm just going to say it. So like, heads up for the next 5 to 10 seconds, or even for the next segment, we're going to talk about this openly. So heads up for a conversation around transphobia, content warning for that. The joke in question is the you know, quote unquote classic, are you assuming their gender or my gender? And the punchline of that joke is, the punchline of the joke started as poking fun at people who took seriously pronouns.
It was an SJW joke.
It was an SJW joke, exactly.
People who were like, actually.
Underscoring that is like a deep dehumanization and dismissal of people for whom the question of their pronouns is often a life or death situation, whether through the kind of desperate need to be able to live as themselves or through the very real history of people being misgendered and being killed over what their gender is. And it's fucked. And it's just like, do better. Like, put people in those positions who you can trust not to make those decisions and produce a work culture where that sort of thing is not only frowned upon, but disallowed. And you won't have those problems, right? Like,
it comes on the heels of only like a month or so ago in which the GOG account made a... And so I guess...
God, I've forgotten about
semantics,
this.
The Cyberpunk joke was a reply. It was not a, hey, we have new screenshots, like, you know, transphobic joke. It was the Cyberpunk account has been, and CD Projekt Red in general, like very active on social media. They are responsive to players in the community, which in a lot of ways is very good. And they usually do good things with that. But that was a response to, I don't know what, but it was a tweet reply as opposed to the GOG one, which was like, you know, announcing something postal And you know, Postal 2 had a joke
right.
riffing on GamerGate.
That was added to that game years later, right?
Right.
Like
right,
after GamerGate,
very, it was, yeah. very Postal 2, which is very much out of what we were talking earlier about, like a certain type of edgy edgelord, South Parkian humor that like Postal as a game, as a series, was like built out of. And they were immediately criticized for like, yo, like, why would you be like, you want to host the game on your service because it's for our archival purposes and that's what GOG does. Like, okay, that's an argument. But then like highlighting and celebrating and like dancing with a joke about like something that was like, you know, a hate movement that like hurt a lot of people, like a little fucked up.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, my pet theory is like, that's probably the same person or the same cluster of people making those decisions. And like, cause there's a certain A to B on who would find A funny and who would find B funny.
Yeah.
And whether that's true or not, like it shows a lack of oversight on CD Projekt Red's part. And so when people are going to start being skeptical about their ability to handle a game world that is going to have to be political in ways that were very different than the way The Witcher was political. And that was a political game that had things to say, but it's just like the way it's going to have to say things, the topics it's going to touch on are drastically different in Cyberpunk. And you have to imagine that that's going to create inherent distrust, even if that is separate from the weight that the quest designers are putting into the time. And you know, Cyberpunk, you know, we have to see the work.
Is a like, fraught genre, right? Like, it's, you're right. We'll have to see the work. Who knows? I my suspicion is the quest designers don't really even know the social media person. That's how probably big not. Those companies are. But that, to me, that doesn't excuse the larger thing, which is like, who are you giving the keys to your kingdom to, right? Like, in like a real way.
And also, right? So the joke is a problem. I would say the bigger problem was
the apology. Yeah.
Because like people make mistakes.
To those offended, I'm sorry.
Right. And it was the phrasing of the apology, in which it wasn't an apology. Like like a true apology is explaining why it was wrong, not saying like, we're sorry if you were offended, because that doesn't explain anything. That doesn't explain why the joke was a problem. Yeah. All that does is give like ammunition to bad faith actors who can go like, fucking SJWs, like pressure them into giving that apology. But we know, CD Projekt because Red that's is still the, that's on our the, side. That's the, a wink, wink.
Right, exactly.
Like when you do that bullshit apology, that's a wink, wink. That
because that like is the actual punchline increasingly for that joke. That's the thing. Is like what was once poking at people on Tumblr like me and at trans folks, which are more than poking at, but dismissing them, dehumanizing them, is now a second layer joke. And that joke is, we're going to upset people. We're going to trigger them. That is the goal of that joke as deployed. It's like, oh, yeah, you motherfucker, you care about this. I'm going to upset you. And to use it thoughtlessly, if this was just a thoughtless use and not a malign use and, you know, not a use with malintent, it's still just fucked. Like, it's still, that's about making sure that the people who represent you like actually represent you, or making sure that the culture at your place is such that that person would just never have the person in that role would just straight up know better. Like, I can trust Kato to never make that joke.
Like, yo, go do it on your own shitty private account.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Especially this is a game where, like, when we were having, you know, discussions with, you know, Quest Designer D3 is like, yeah, this game is political. It's going to have to talk about, like, gender and sexuality.
Yep.
And transhumanism. And it's like, okay, well,
and the
if
thing
that's
is
true,
right?
Then like, why isn't the social media guy know, like, yo, maybe don't
fuck with
about,
this, right?
Like, gender.
So one of the responses to this was people saying like, Cyberpunk, it's not a very Cyberpunk tweet. And I actually think it's a very Cyberpunk tweet, because Cyberpunk has been historically pretty transphobic and pretty homophobic and pretty misogynistic. Right. It has had lots of fucking problems.
Decades ago
that were just kind of forefronted by white dudes. That space has gotten better because lots of queer creators, lots of creators of color, and lots of kind of non-Western creators have gone into that space to touch it and make Cyberpunk better. But the truth of it, and the thing that I think a lot of those comments were getting at and I want to recognize, is that it's a fraught genre. It's a genre that does, like you just said, say things. Any genre that's going to tackle transhumanism, that's going to tackle people transforming their bodies, that's going to tackle class relations, is walking into a minefield. And I'm glad that someone is doing that stuff. When we talked to one of the quest designers at E3, he made no bones about the fact that this was a game that had political themes and that was willing to be political. In fact, that quest designer has publicly said that he was disappointed with that tweet. All that stuff, like, it can't be enough to say, yes, we're going to include it. It has to be clear to the folks on your team what including it means and like what the stakes are, because you can't just tackle complex issues like this from a point of indifference or where you have no skin in the game and think that just by being willing to tackle them at all, you're going to do a good job. You need to
move beyond that, right?
Right.
Like, it used to be the case that by just raising the issue, you'd get credit.
Right.
Like that's the woke part, right? Is like, ha, acknowledging it's a thing is itself, something, but like we're beyond that point now.
Yep.
There has to be responsibility and there has to be follow through. And this is a game that is, there's a good chance it doesn't come out next year, right? And so like it's going to be a problem.
Yep.
If, like, every step of the way, there's going to be a new. It's still going to be a big game. Like, in no way am I arguing like this isn't going to be like one of the biggest games.
No, I mean that's been one of the most
comes out. But in terms of people's inherent trust in its ability to handle certain issues, it's going to chinks at that armor. Are going to hurt it
if, right.
Like, every time they're showing it, there's an example where you can show a body of evidence. It's like, maybe they're not taking this as seriously as, and maybe I should lower my expectations for, like, what this game could pull off.
Right. Well, and I think that there's a disconnect there between, I think partially that disconnect reflects the, maybe it's not a disconnect at all, and this is the most frustrating, maybe the most disheartening thing, is I think that if this game has two or three more of these things happen, five more of these things happen, I still think it sells millions and millions and millions of copies.
I don't think,
right?
I think it could be openly transphobic and like embrace it, and it would still be like an enormous, because the pedigree of The Witcher and City, like they transcend
also
that.
Just at this point in games, like if a game is polished enough, it will sell. If a game is pretty enough, it will sell. If a game is dense enough with features, if there are enough bullet points on the back and something like, oh yeah, this is novel, it will sell. And we're not there yet the way we are with films, right? We're like, Dinesh, no one is watching Dinesh D'Souza's fucking documentaries. You know what I mean? In terms of the wide range of film viewership. What's his face? Put out that really bad looking horror movie. Eli Roth put out that SJW, cause go to Brazil, or not to Brazil, to South America, and find a... Very few people watched that, all said. Not just because they thought that it, had bad... I don't know. Like, Eli Roth is a proven filmmaker, and people could have gone to see that movie, and they didn't. But we're not really at that point in games yet where people are like, something about this feels fishy to me. Like, that stuff is going to continue to sell, and that can be disheartening. And I'm not even saying that the game couldn't be good yet. Like you said, we've seen this so many times, and we know the shape and size of these companies and we know that a game like this could very reasonably ship with one quest that feels fucking fantastic around some of this stuff and another one that you play immediately after it that just drops the ball completely, because that's how games are made, and it sucks.
That's 100% going to happen. Like, someone in the chat was mentioning that, like, there's a deeply transphobic quest in, like, The Witcher 3, like a game that holistically, like, does a lot of really interesting, meaningful, thoughtful things in regards to, like, sex, gender, politics, and race, and like all that. Like, as a whole game, I think, like, it's an arrow pointing up in terms of what it tries to do. That said, like, in games that dense, shit's gonna both slip through, and there's gonna be quality, filters that just, like, don't, there's gonna be all sorts of reasons stuff slips through the cracks. And so I think, the worry here is like, well, how much, how to weight all of this stuff, especially when it's a game that we can't play, we can't evaluate that stuff. And so while, you maybe feel for certain quest designers that are like putting up their hands, they're like, hey, I'm taking this super seriously, and like, we're watching out for this. It's like, well, I can only judge what you're putting out.
Right.
And so,
which is screenshots.
There's no gameplay trailer.
Right.
Like, they didn't really.
Nope.
Or the E3 demo. And so it's like, some people have to work with are the tweets, like in a game that's coming out next month. It would be a thing, but it wouldn't be a thing because you'd be able to judge it against the backdrop of a lot of other stuff to work with.
Right.
Right now, Cyberpunk for a lot of people is still a theoretical. It's in their imagination. It's in their head. And so, like, that is being more influenced by events like this because that's all people have to work with.
So
one last thing. I have a pet theory about Cyberpunk where
please.
They have you know, I think there's like a handful of games we saw at E3 this year that, you know, people have kind of like sketched aside as like, oh, that's like, that's probably a next gen game.
Yeah.
And when we, I think we asked in our interview about like, well, yeah, you're showing this now. Like, is this going to come out on Xbox One and PS4? And they said like, we're showing it, you know, and those consoles are out right now. And it was kind of a wishy-washy answer. My pet theory is that it is going to come out on Xbox One and PlayStation 4, but not those base models. And that it's a game.
It'll be the first Pro and X only.
It will be part of a series of games that still technically come out on the previous gen,
right,
but will require you to have the advanced version of the hardware. So they're able to say, still on Xbox One,
right,
still on PlayStation 4. But like, asterisk, like, requires Xbox One X and PlayStation 4. And like, they'll still, they won't run terrific. Like, you'll want the new box in order for it to run, like, you know, aggregate to like a decent PC. But my thought is they leave behind those old boxes and they just do the upgraded tiers, because both those machines are a little more well equipped to pull off like a low end version of those games.
Robo Witch in the chat says Pro and X, aka the first Prox game. Love it.
Yes.
Love it so much. What else is coming out of Gamescom? Do you have that list? Can you send me over that list real quick?
Yeah. So they didn't really show any outside of that. They didn't really.
There was like some screenshots or some shit, right?
Some screenshots. My guess is that game is going to go quiet after this. They'll just like leak, you know, they'll put out screenshots and concept art until sometime.
Until someone leaks.
Ultimately might go really quiet till E3 next year.
Yeah.
And then E3 probably get a release date, blah, blah, blah. Battlefield, open beta date, blah, blah, blah. Smash Brothers. Assassin's Creed, we're skipping next year.
Yeah, Assassin's Creed isn't
a game
no,
in 2019.
Right, right. Which is interesting.
I am looking forward to Odyssey, though. Like,
I haven't watched this new, whatever that came out of Gamescom yet. Same basic stuff.
Like, I saw what I saw at E3, and I was like, yo, you're going to try and make, like, a Witcher-fied Assassin's Creed? I'm here for it, especially given how good Origins was. Like, if you haven't played Origins, if you were tired of Assassin's Creed, like you, like me, far more than I thought they were. I'm interested to see what that new Darksiders game is. I like those. I liked the first one. I liked the second one. Life is Strange.
Life is Strange. Didn't talk. We should pull that up, maybe. Let me pull that up.
Yeah, we should watch that trailer.
Do you want to link me to yours?
I don't have one yet.
Oh, okay.
Let me see if I can find it.
I'll let you look it up.
The first episode comes out next month, so it's like a month from now, I think, late September.
Yeah. All right, ready to watch this thing?
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
And then maybe you can read the little write up for it once we're done. All right. Ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, go.
So these two brothers were, if you played the Captain Spirit.
How am I supposed to take care of us out here?
You saw them. They were neighbors of the boy featured in Captain Spirit.
Right.
He's not anywhere in here, although the developers have hinted that he will make some sort of reappearance in the game proper. Maybe
gotcha.
My thought is it'll probably just be the beginning.
On the ground! Don't move!
It'll just be some sort of crossover where maybe they tell them, you know, what was happening at that house, but...
What are we gonna do now?
Yeah.
There's nothing we can't do.
Actual description of the game, because...
As long as we're together.
It's a really interesting picture.
Yeah, do you have that description up?
Yeah, I'm pulling it on that.
Okay.
Yeah, so... So this is the official sort of write-up... Don't Nod, which is the main characters of Life is Strange 2 are brothers Sean, 16, and Daniel Diaz, 9. Two brothers living a fairly normal life in Seattle, Washington. Following a tragic event, their lives are forever changed. Now on the run from the police and threatened with both separation and incarceration, Sean decides to take his younger brother and seek a better life in their family's hometown of Puerto Lobos, Mexico. Life on the road is tough and dangerous. The brothers will face all manner of challenges as they bravely undertake a journey that will test the bonds of brotherhood. I guess, Sean, you'll need to make the kind of tough choices you can expect from a Life is Strange game. You'll need to live with the consequences of your actions. The game will this time focus on brotherhood alongside the need to guide and educate your younger brother while simultaneously coming of age yourself. As with previous games in the series, Life is Strange 2 will tackle a host of issues that all of us can identify with that will cause moral dilemmas and require much soul-searching. These themes come together most powerfully in the way Daniel will develop depending on the lessons you teach him and the role model you decide to be. So, I mean, you know, a game that, you know, touching on immigration issues,
yep.
Family separation issues.
Definitely.
You know, stuff that was, certainly in the air in when this game is probably starting development in like 2016, that has become all the more prescient.
Yeah. I mean, like, even just the notion of like two young kids on, you know, out in the world by themselves is a pretty potent and packed
one. To have an interaction with police
young people of color to have, yeah, exactly, some sort of violent interaction with a cop is, let's say, pretty heavy and again, fraught. So I'm very curious. I like Life is Strange 1 a lot.
I like Life is Strange 1 is a lot, and I liked Before the Storm, but didn't love Before the Storm. Mm-hmm. And I would say I outright loved Captain Spirit.
Right.
But if you do, I don't have the links to me offhand, but like there are plenty of reasons to be like deeply critical of like the way like Life is Strange handled like
it's queer issues and yeah
queer issues, like some really fucked up ways they depicted disability and the what's life is like to, you know, be someone, going through, you know, experiences like that. But, and it's a big but like they nailed an emotional core that I think resonated with a lot of people. It's why I think a lot of folks were able to, if not hand wave, then like look past that stuff to something that spoke to them. And I think Life is Strange spoke to a lot of people. It felt very authentic. And this is, you know, Captain Spirit, I thought I dealt very thoughtfully with, you know, issues of parenthood and child abuse, and like the fact that they're gonna go, hey, now we're gonna do one that like touches on like immigration and like fuck, okay, you okay, know, I think that's gonna be
let's
fraught.
See how it goes. Yeah,
my guess is they're gonna fuck up parts of it, but what I'm excited about is like it's a however it ends, I think even when they fuck up, like it seems like a team that's trying to be thoughtful about it,
right,
as they make mistakes along the way. So I'm cautiously optimistic, and I'm glad that the sequel is swinging for the fences in a way that the cynical version of me did. You know, there's a version where you follow Chloe and Max.
Yep.
You know,
and that's it. Again, do you think they pop up? Do you think we get a nod to them in some way?
They said it's a universe, right? Yeah, so like it's called Life is Strange for the Life is Strange universe at this point for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, there are references in Captain Spirit. My guess is supposedly there has been data mining. I haven't read that stuff, so no spoilers. But, you know, they are aware that people want to know what happened to those characters. And my guess is Life is Strange, she will find. I really doubt that, like, Chloe and Max are going to show up. But I won't be surprised if you find, like, scraps of paper that, you know, give you some closure about, you know, what happened to those characters. So, yeah, I am really excited. And, yeah, it's not far off. So
right. Patrick,
I'll be curious.
People will not let us go without watching this Devil May Cry 5 trailer. So
that's fine. Let me see if there's any other news to watch about, talk about. Otherwise, we'll close on
this DMC 5 thing, which I skimmed, but I did not actually sit down and watch. So
Master Chief Collection added to Xbox One Game Pass. That's cool. Good. Hunt Showdown coming to Xbox One.
That game Microsoft is still neat.
Smartly using Sony.
Yeah,
the fuck is whatever. Don't do an early access program. That's fine. But I think it is, even though the Hunt Showdown, I don't know what the state of that game is, but I think it continues to be really smart of.
They should be throwing that stuff at the wall. Microsoft should continue to be throwing that stuff at the wall, because you never know when the next thing is going to be. You know, it might not be a Fortnite, but it can be a DayZ again. You know,
you don't need the big game if you have a bunch of small to medium games simmering in the background. Shenmue 3 got the release date. I don't have any. I didn't play Shenmue. An affinity for the series. I will probably play the third one because I'm like curious in the culture.
But I
might load up the PC version just because I've literally never played it.
That's hitting this week, right?
I think it's out now. Stuff? Yeah. I think it came out this week. State of Decay Daybreak DLC.
Oh, cool. I missed that entirely. I'll check that out.
Dying Light, Bad Blood, a Battle Royale Dying Light game. You know what? I won't count out those folks because they seem to be real smart about Dying Light.
Yeah.
That could be fine.
The Quiet Man got a new trailer.
Yo, I watched it. They are not showing anything about that game, and it keeps saying come soon, which means like that's probably just gonna like really drop.
Yeah.
Like, there'll be a trailer that's like out next week.
I've been hearing some rumors about that development cycle being very rough. So
New Settlers game. That's it. All right.
We're gonna watch this DMC5 trailer. Let me know when you're ready.
Okay.
3, 2, 1, go.
Partial nudity.
Uh-oh. That's Nero?
You're up, Nico.
I think so. Also, like, as this trailer is starting, we are both pro DMC, and I mean, you know, capital D, lowercase m, capital C.
Uh-huh.
Try not to get us killed. That was a good game. There.
I still never got around to it.
What?
I know.
God, damn
I know.
It. All right, well then, I am capital.
Okay.
D, lowercase m, capital C.
I like that van that just says Devil May Cry on it in neon. That's good. Yeah, freeze time and shoot people with a cool revolver. Why not?
I mean, this looks like a good character action game.
Yep.
Like,
surfing on dudes. Weird faces coming out of the goo. The blood. Wow, that's a cool enemy. That's a good enemy.
That looks...
That's some...
Miyazaki taking notes.
Yeah, uh-huh. Both Miyazakis, actually, weirdly. Both FromSoft Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli Miyazaki. It's like the exact overlap between the two. Uh-huh. Wow. You gotta throw Godzilla by the tail sometimes.
That's all right.
Break a building on top of him. Okay. What is...
Space Pam 2 says he looks like a YouTube influencer, and now you just like that's just put some Logan Paul DLC in this game.
Uh-huh, that's Logan Paul. Nero is Logan Paul. Logan Paul just did a backbreaker. That was alright.
Drop your diss track, Logan.
God. Shout out to the Logang. Alright, he's surfing on a rocket.
Is that the name?
That's the name. The Logang is the name of the Logan Paul's like click. Hashtag Logang. It's just a good RV. It's just a good RV. You ever think about getting an RV, Patrick?
Down the street from me, someone doesn't have an RV but has like a big, what do you call them?
Yeah.
Like a
trailer.
Travel bus. Like
a travel bus.
That's not the term, but whatever. I'm bringing it back.
Is
I'm
Dante
the word travel bus? No, it's like a, I guess RV, but it's huge. Like it's.
Sorry, Patrick. I'm distracted by Dante turning his motorcycle into twin axes. And also being a dad who looks like AJ Styles, the wrestler. Wait a second. Did they cast? I gotta find. Oh, why did they
go back to the dad?
I gotta go back to the dad. I gotta check out this dad real quick. Unfortunately, this guy looks so much like AJ Styles. I had to make it happen now and blow up this photo of AJ Styles.
Someone in the chat with a dad-tay. Dad-tay.
Is he a dad in this?
I don't know. Seems like it could be. Dante gets around.
Okay. What's Nero's relation to Dante?
Brother. I don't know.
Is it brother? Is it uncle? All right. I'm just saying. One second. Let's look at this dad. Pull it back.
Roll that beautiful dad.
Roll that dad footage, please. This is the same.
He's dual wielding a motorcycle.
That's their dad. That's it. That's him right there. Shout out, that's him. I'm sorry. I'm sure he's also based on the real voice actor or whatever, but this is just AJ Styles with his hair cut different. So
maybe he's doing the voice.
Maybe he's doing the voice now. The demon community. Fuck. Devil May Cry 5 looks like a Devil May Cry game.
I wanted more of that motorcycle getting ripped apart.
It's cool. It's a cool. That's a cool way.
That's the part of the game I want to play.
That's a cool way to use a motorcycle.
That means we could probably get DMC 5 and Bayonetta 3 same year, 2019.
That's true. Wait, when is this out? Wait, what was the date on
March.
This? This is all right. This is also March, right? God. Oh.
And they haven't said when Bayonetta's coming out, which means it's probably.
We're going to be so busy, Patrick. We're going to be so busy. Let's just get an RV. Let's just get an RV.
Yeah,
let's
go play games on RV.
An RV.
Like, get internet. We'll play the games on RV. We'll go stop at diners, the diner tour.
This sounds good. This sounds better than what we're doing now.
We'll write the reviews on that RV. We'll go to weird bars, and we'll do karaoke meetups.
Yeah. What's the Seinfeld show? The Cars and Comedians?
Yeah.
Let's do RVs and video games, you know?
Catchy title.
I'll workshop it. You know, Cars and Comedians Getting Coffee. It'll be
get
it'll
Epic be, Games to sponsor it. There's a battle right. bus.
There's a battle bus.
They got so much money.
Hey, Joel, are you listening? Joel, make this happen. I know we never take money from game companies. One exception, Epic put us on a battle bus.
We'll play Fortnite once a day.
That's it. Sure. I love it. Victory Royale. Woo.
Influencers.
Tomato Tom. See, I got it. Walker. I still got it. That's me. I'm Tomato Tom, an influencer. That's me.
I will wear a costume.
Wow, you could be a good beef buddy, Chief Beef.
What are you calling me?
Chief Beef. Mm. All right, we should wrap it up today as we've been going.
Chief Beef likes that partial nudity.
God damn it, I hate everything. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Patrick?
Diners, Drive-Ins, and Games. Spin off!
There it is. There it is. Let us live that life, please, world. You can find Patrick Klepek at Patrick Klepek on Twitter. You can find Waypoint, Twitter.com/Waypoint, Facebook.com/Waypoint. Vice.
Wait, Waypoint.Twitter.com?
Waypoint.Twitter.com. We're a new subdomain. It's our Mastodon instance.
That's probably like Twitter's like CMS, their back end.
Twitter.com/Waypoint, Facebook.com/Waypoint Vice. Find me over on Mastodon now. I'm over there. I'm on WillSmithsContent.com.
I registered a Mastodon account.
Have you posted yet?
No, I will never post there, probably.
No, that's fair.
It's like another thing to do. Like, I barely.
You got cut off there, and that's fine by me. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for us. We'll be back tomorrow, probably, with something else. I'd like to try to sneak in one more XCOM stream this week if we can. So look forward to that, maybe, if we can make it happen. In any case, until then, peace.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.